Hello again, everybody. Welcome back to the Untitled Opinion, the show that looks at movies, comic book movies, TV shows, a lot of different things, and tells you what's wrong with them and what should be better. Like we're high-minded individuals or something. I don't know. I'm your co-host, Vito Del Sante. Joining me, as always, are my co-host, Scott Fogg.
Hello, hello.
And our co-host, Mr. Dan Faust.
Hello.
So I had an idea a few weeks ago, which is the premise of today's show, and it was, what if we took some characters, some comic book characters that we like, and we said, let's make these movies earlier than what they were created in. I think Scott had a better description of it, movies that were lost in time. Right, Scott? That's what you said?
Yeah.
Okay. So I just want to quote you correctly. So basically, some of the ideas we threw out were Martin Scorsese doing Daredevil in the 70s. Trying to think of some other ones we had. But yeah, so that's what today's premise is. You know, well, I don't want to ruin what pitches we do have, so I don't want to, get too much into what we were thinking. But, I think the concept's pretty simple.
Mm-hmm. I think so. I may have done it wrong.
I don't think you can.
we'll see.
But the interesting thing I want to do is, at the end of this episode, after everybody listens to it, we put it on the Facebook page and everything, I'm going to start a Facebook poll.
And so,
So we're going to have the three pitches that we have today, and you guys, the listeners, get to vote on which one you would have liked to have seen, or which ones you would like to turn on to Turner Classic Movies and watch right now. So I just thought it'd be a fun way to see, not so much who's better at this or anything, but just I wonder what people would like to see. What do you feel you missed out on, in a sense,
But also who's better at it.
Jerk. Now you're going first.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. It seems like whenever I get one of these sorts of assignments or what have you, I always seem to go to the Bwahaha Justice League. I don't know why, but I do. So that's what I did this time, and I've come up with it's a very basic pitch. I spent most of the time on the cast, but it's the Justice League by Ivan Reitman and Harold Ramis.
So this is why this show's gonna be good.
The timing doesn't really work out because technically, this Justice League was post-crisis, mm-hmm. which was so it was post-86.
Right.
But I'm shooting more for the golden age of 82, 84, Stripes Ghostbusters era.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I broke time for this.
So let me get this straight. So the movie would take place in 1984.
That's when it would be made. So that's when it would take place.
Okay, got it. I just want. I didn't mean to say that it would be made then, because it could have been made in 83 and be set in 2001. I just meant if I were to go to the cinema, the year that I would be seeing this would be when I was 10, and so 1983, that kind of thing?
Yeah.
Okay,
gotcha. 83, 84. All right.
Yeah, already it's a winner. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm just saying, but yeah. Go ahead.
All right. Oh, and I want to preface this based upon a conversation Scott and I have had on Facebook. I am going to say Captain Marvel. Mm-hmm. When I say Captain Marvel, I mean Billy Batson.
That's what you're mispronouncing Carol Danvers.
Stop it. Okay, here we go. So, the plot of the movie. Earth has just successfully halted an alien invasion from a world known as Apocalypse. As Earth's greatest heroes, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, The Flash, etc., chase the last remaining invaders off into deep space, Maxwell Lord creates a new Justice League to protect Earth in their absence. This new Justice League consists of Booster Gold, Blue Beetle, Green Lantern Guy Gardner, Black Canary, Captain Marvel, Fire, Ice, and Dr. Fate. So, as Lord is getting his new team of heroes ready, wicked media pundit G. Gordon Godfrey questions whether or not the Earth needs superheroes at all. Is it not possible, he declares, that these muscle-bound powerhouses are actually attracting these threats they claim to be protecting us from?
Time out. Okay, not to jump to the end, but okay. Is he played by Gilbert Godfrey?
No. Is he played by the dude that played the dick in Ghostbusters?
Oh, that would have been great, but no, he's played by Colin Baker.
No, that man has no dick.
that's the guy.
Yes.
Exactly the guy I was thinking of. I can't remember his name, but that's who I was thinking of. But,
Atherton, William Atherton.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So as the new league is getting used to their fancy new headquarters, a boob. Great. we can edit that out in post, right?
Hello, Dr. Freud.
A boom tube opens, depositing Big Barda and Oberon.
Go on.
The newcomers claim to be escapees from the slave pits of Apocalypse. They have come to Earth for aid, as Earth is the only planet in the galaxy to have successfully defeated the nigh-unstoppable Darkseid. Big Barda asks the Justice League to return with them to Apocalypse and rescue her husband, Scott Free, also known as Mr. Miracle, from the clutches of the vile Granny Goodness. And then they go to Apocalypse and wackiness ensues.
Is you're playing it as a comedy with, you know, Ivan Reitman and Harold Ramis, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there's more to it, but I just want to throw this question out there. How is Darkseid portrayed? Because I feel like you can comically.
I don't think we see him.
Okay. I was going to say, because I can see you doing like a Kalibak comically, or maybe not Steppenwolf comically. He would come across as like the straight man, like the Margaret Dumont in kind of like the Marx Brothers type of thing.
Right. But, you know, I don't think you necessarily need to see Darkseid.
Okay. That works for me.
Yeah.
The less I see him, the better. He owes me $7.
He owes me Tree Fitty.
About Tree Fitty. So what else did you have with it? I felt like I cut you off for a second there.
No. That was basically it. Like I said, it was a very.
Please tell me.
I spent most of the time on the cast.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Please tell me you casted it, because this is going to be the best.
Oh, absolutely. All right. So the cast consists of playing Booster Gold, Bill Murray.
Perfect.
Yes.
And then obviously playing Blue Beetle, Dan Aykroyd.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Our Guy Gardner will be John Candy.
No, I that will not stand. Because John Candy's Gnort, no matter what.
go back and watch Stripes.
I have Stripes memorized. There's no way you can tell me that. Like he's too lovable. That's why he's the Chewbacca thing in Spaceballs.
Barf.
Thank you, Barf. So like
I find Guy very lovable.
Your movie, man. Go ahead.
Black Canary, Donna Dixon.
Oh yeah. That's good.
As Fire, you may know her as one of the leads from Fame, Irene Cara.
Good job. Good job, man.
As Ice, Leah Thompson.
Mm.
As Captain Marvel, Judge Reinhold.
Wait, no.
No, not Carol Danvers.
Billy Batson, he means. Scott, come on.
Work with me here.
No,
that's really good. I like that.
Dr. Fate is Harold Ramis.
Okay, yeah, that works.
Big Barda is Sigourney Weaver.
Oh, my God, just killed it. You just killed it.
Mr. Miracle is Eddie Murphy. Billy Barty will be playing Oberon.
Because you need, yes.
Yeah. As I said before, G. Gordon Godfrey will be Colin Baker, a.k.a. the Sixth Doctor.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Our Granny Goodness will be Goonies Anne Ramsey. And as Maxwell Lord, Michael Douglas.
Oh, nice. I almost thought you were going to say Michael Keaton. You know, I heard the Michael and I jumped in with Michael Keaton. But yeah, I think Michael Douglas is, you know, like off of like Wall Street kind of. Well,
yeah.
this would be pre-Wall Street, but it would totally be the proto Gordon Gekko, you know?
Yeah.
It would be like
young, like slick back hair, besuited Michael Douglas.
I like it. I like it a lot.
I only have one tiny nitpick. If I was the studio or whatever, as I listen to the pitch, because I think it's perfect in like almost every way. But there's a part of me that almost wants to keep the whole thing based on Earth instead of going to Apocalypse for or any other planet. Like, because didn't you say the Justice League leaves Earth to go pursue stuff? I almost feel like the setup should be like, well, Earth needs protecting while they're gone. And it almost feels like, I don't know, there's a certain part of like, especially like you think of Ghostbusters and some of those sci-fi movies of the 80s where it's like there's this big idea, but there's not the budget for it. So we're just going to kind of set it in downtown Manhattan. There's almost a part of me that almost wants to see it set here, them dealing with stuff here. Like, I almost feel like that would almost be, I don't know, I feel like that'd almost be like in line with some of like the 80s kind of comedies that we saw. But sure. I love it though. I do love everything you've just said. So that's a nitpick.
See, I'm still angry that Masters of the Universe took place on Earth, so I'm fighting back against that.
That's fair. Totally fair.
That's a good response, man.
I mean, Courtney Cox, what?
All right, I guess I'll go, because
all right,
I have a very interesting presentation for my pitch.
Interpretive dance.
Yes, it's perfect for a podcast. The year is 1960.
Okay? He's moving his arms over his head.
The year is 1960.
Okay? Undulating slowly.
Okay, so we are at a movie theater, obviously 1960, and we have a trailer. So I'm reading the trailer to you. Okay. So we see the title come up, and it's called The Arrow and the Canary, the new romantic comedy from Billy Wilder. He's a billionaire that never had time for anyone. Hold my calls, Trudy. Another midday appointment, Mr. Queen? Something like that. She's a florist trying to escape her mother's shadow. Mom, I'm fine. Dinah, you're almost 30. I'm 24. Both of them have a secret. You? That will set them on a collision course with the world's greatest assassin. The name's Slade Wilson. Your contract says, time's up. Watch as these two star-crossed lovers see the world on the back of a motorcycle. No. I am not going to Gotham City. Why not? Let's just say I'm not welcome. You're such a baby. As they come across all types of colorful characters. Hi, my name is Barry Hay, Speedy Gonzalez, Scram. Starring Robert Redford as Oliver Queen, Jane Fonda as Dinah Lance, and Adam West as Slade Wilson. Coming to a theater near you. So there you go.
Wow.
I just thought, look, man, I love Billy Wilder. I'm a big fan of, it's funny because like I was thinking about it, and Billy Wilder wrote two of my favorite movies. One is Double Indemnity, which is a film noir, and the other is The Apartment, which is like a screwball kind of romantic comedy. And you could go either way with it, and I kind of wanted to go more towards The Apartment, more so than Double Indemnity. Because I kind of wanted to, you know, kind of, when I think of Billy Wilder, I think of like, I mean, like his name just makes me think of like just a fun time at the movies, you know? So, and Double Indemnity, while I love it, it's Raymond Chandler and Billy Wilder in a sense. So like it kind of doesn't fit that kind of vision of what Billy Wilder is to me. And like, you know, you think of Some Like It Hot, and you think of a couple of other ones, you know, like, and like he does do those kind of screwball moments really, really well. And so that's kind of why I wanted to play like more like a comedy. And, you know, like the idea of Slade Wilson just kind of like just more being a pain than being an assassin. And they're not really superheroes. They're more like just Oliver will have that secret identity. Funny, while I was in Long Beach a couple of weeks ago, I caught the tail end of an Errol Flynn movie where he plays a novelist that is solving a crime. And I had never heard of that movie. And I caught the tail end of it. And I was like, I got to watch this movie. And he played so cavalier and so like carefree. And I really liked it, what I saw of it. And I thought, well, that's kind of a way to play Oliver Queen. Kind of like he's got a secret identity. A secret life. But he doesn't have to necessarily wear a mask, so to speak. You know, he just has to do those things, you know. And, I would let him use the bow and arrow still, you know, but not necessarily, you know, put him in the Green Arrow costume, but I would put him in green stuff, you know, like different shades of green. And with Dinah, you know, like she's, you know, she's young, she's 24, and she does have a secret. You know, she's trying to be her mother's daughter without her mother knowing it. But, you know, what does that entail? So, yeah, her mother, Diana, would have been in the Justice Society. So, you know, we're playing very loose, though, with those details. And Slade just, you know, he's more so, I'm trying to think of the character in Breakfast at Tiffany's, who was kind of just like, I think it was Holly's husband, you know, like back in Texas, mm-hmm. who wasn't really a factor in, you know, he was a factor in her life, but he wasn't actually present for the, mm-hmm. For the most part. And I was like, well, let's take that and just put Slade in that kind of role and just put him like, not as the ex-boyfriend or something like that, but just kind of like this kind of dangerous force. Like maybe he was Dinah's ex-boyfriend, but like he's got a secret and he is the world's greatest assassin. So it's mm-hmm. just, you know, the two of them just trying to like go on a date basically without getting caught by the world's greatest
Adam
assassin.
West.
Yeah. And dude, when it came to me that Adam West would like be right about, he was like 30 something in 1960. So he was just before Batman. I was just like, that's perfect. You know, cause like Robert Redford and Jane Fonda are about the same age at that point. They're both about 24, 25 years old. And I'm like, all right, that's perfect. And then Adam West is just a little bit older. So he can be a little bit dangerous, but like he can have that kind of like scene chewing pre Batman type of presence on the screen.
Right.
I just thought that would just be a lot of fun. So yeah, so I would love to have seen Billy Wilder's The Arrow and the Canary.
I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, so my turn. Okay, those were both really good, but my favorite Marvel movie came out in 1941. If you guys remember, following up The Great Dictator, Charlie Chaplin was looking for his next big movie. And so he started, he turned to the not yet created Marvel Cavalcade of Heroes. And combing through the archives, he found one character, one story that he related to just on a cellular level. Oh, the Inhumanity begins in New York City in the rubble and crater of what was once an apartment building. Digging his way out of the dust and debris is that mute tramp, Black Bolt. The police surround him, pegging him for the destruction. He remains mute, but silently insists it wasn't him. They try to arrest him, but he escapes. The movie that unfolds is a wacky chase through New York City as New York's bumbling finest pursue Black Bolt, while Black Bolt simultaneously tries to evade the cops and prove his innocence. Black Bolt continuously finds himself in situations that he could easily get out of, that he could easily explain if he would just open his mouth. Alas, he cannot. Thus, he is made to suffer over and over again. He meets and falls in love with Medusa, a wild-haired woman played by Paulette Goddard. Their meet-cute involves her hair seeming to have a mind of its own, moving things behind Black Bolt's back. He ends up in a fistfight with the hair before subduing it, tying it up, and stuffing it under a hat Medusa wears for the rest of the film. As the police now chase Black Bolt and Medusa, they cut through the park where they find a girl playing with her dog in a fountain. It's a hot summer day, so Black Bolt and Medusa stop to get a drink. When the police catch up to them, Black Bolt and Medusa dash, knocking the girl over, who splashes the water out of the fountain. As soon as the water hits the ground, it freezes, sending the cops sliding over sheets of ice in Central Park. Black Bolt is delighted by this and skates around them, booping them on the nose and pulling down their pants. The girl introduces herself as Crystal and her dog, Lockjaw. Together, the four of them escape the cops. Black Bolt is trying to get to the bottom of what happened, and the girls make him sit down and try to remember the events that led up to the building's destruction. Black Bolt recalls a shifty man slinking around the apartment. To his surprise, that very man is on the front page of the newspaper. It's Senator Kelly. The Inhumans make a dash for Senator Kelly's office, where, as they confront him, are trapped by the police. Senator Kelly finally admits, yes, it was him. He's tired of their kind, and thought framing them for this would force them to move out of the city. Black Bolt shouts and excited, aha! We cut to a wide shot of the building exploding. The movie ends with Black Bolt, Medusa, Crystal, and Lockjaw digging themselves out of the wreckage. Black Bolt size. He can't ever win. Circle down to black.
Who's the Medusa again?
Paulette Goddard.
Okay, and who did you have for?
I don't have a cast for the rest of them, sadly. Okay. I started trying to look at actors from that time, and there was a part of me that really wanted to make it like a Charlie Chaplin versus Buster Keaton movie. But I couldn't quite find it, so I just made it like a Charlie Chaplin mutant movie.
But now here's a question: is Charlie Chaplin as Black Bolt dressed as Charlie Chaplin, or is he dressed as Black Bolt?
I think he's dressed as Charlie Chaplin with just one little fork on his head. Like, it's just like always kind of there.
Okay.
No, I don't know. But what's fun is like it isn't with it being 1941, if it's post Great Dictator, you can have sound. So you could have other people talking around him, but you could allow Charlie to continue being kind of the mute kind of physical comedy tramp that he was throughout most of his career. Because he also kind of hated talkies. He never really wanted to make them. So this is a fun way to kind of be a little meta with it, too.
Would he direct it as well?
Oh, of course.
And would you call it The Inhumans or Black Bolt?
Oh, The Inhumanity.
Oh, that's what it is. That's right. I like that.
You missed the pun.
I do you know what's funny? When he said that, I didn't think that was the title of the movie. I thought he was just starting off saying that.
Oh. As I do.
Mm-hmm. This was fun, man. I mean, I don't know that I would push myself to do it again. It's fun in talking to you guys, but in doing it, it was just like, oh my god, how am I going to present this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but like, I don't know, like, there are so many. You know what's funny? I was at work today, and I was thinking another interesting thing that I would like to see. But I'm not going to pitch it or anything, would be like 1969, 1970 Andy Warhol doing Captain America, because it would be so counterculture and almost pornographic in a sense, you know. But like it would be a very interesting statement on the character, you know what I mean? Like it would be like if Robert Crumb drew a Captain America comic in a sense, you know what I mean? Like, and I was just thinking, like, that's an interesting, you know, point of view, but I don't know that I would rush to see that movie. You know, like that would have to be something where, like, I'm at a party with a bunch of like people. By the way, this is an actual thing that used to happen to me all the time. I was at a party with a bunch of people that were in different positions within, you know, like either the sex industry or like the music industry or both. You know, like I've been to parties like this where I literally just showed up and then it was like, oh, someone's getting a tattoo. Why are we watching this? This woman says she's a prostitute. That kind of thing. Like, I've been to some weird parties in my time, and lo and behold, on TV was on playing on a VCR would be like old Betty Page videos. You know, like I've been to some weird parties, so I could totally see, like, walking into a party and just like, oh, it's Andy Warhol's Captain America or something. But like, I don't know that I would have sought it out, you know, like,
right.
In a sense, whereas, you know, any of these three,
it would have to be something that happened to you.
Totally. Oh boy.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, that's a really good way to do it.
I didn't see this movie. It happened to me.
That's funny. I've seen a few Andy Warhol movies that did happen to me. So, and let me tell you, they are like indelible stains on your soul in a sense, because they're so. I would encourage anybody listening, and I would encourage you guys if you're daring enough to actually try to watch an Andy Warhol movie, with the exception of his like Frankenstein. Like there was one or two that were just like there was one about cowboys. That I remember being at a bar.
Terror of Tiny Town?
No. I'll get the address. I'll get the name of it for a second in a second. But I was at a bar in I think only Dan will get the significance of this, but I was at a bar in Williamsburg.
Uh-huh.
Called Galapagos, and I don't think it's open anymore. I think they
closed. Oh,
it.
Yeah.
They would do some kind of weird arty things there every now and again, you know, like it's hard to really qualify, but like they would just do some weird arty things there. And then one day I literally walked into a different room and there was an Andy Warhol cowboy movie that was like it was so weird. It was pseudo homosexual tension tone thing. And then there's like, you know, nudity. And like I said, semi-pornographic, but not truly pornographic. You know what I mean? Like it's called Lonesome Cowboys is the movie.
Of course it is.
It's from 1968. But yeah, like some weird movies, but like the thing about them is that they were so, Warhol was so kind of untalented that his talent was in his untalentedness, inability to have talent. I don't know how to say it, you know, but like, you know what I mean? Like he was just, he wasn't a visionary. He was just somebody that was willing to kind of put ugliness in front of people, I guess.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, funny enough, Andy Warhol in 1966 did a movie called Superboy. So take that for what it is. So.
Holy smokes. Have you guys seen the JSA?
No. Yes. No. 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 No.
Sorry. Dan just posted something on Facebook 3 minutes ago, which I guess would have been before the podcast. I don't know. Someone wouldn't Facebook during the podcast. But here on Facebook, there's a picture of the Justice Society, and it looks amazing.
Goodness, look at Obsidian. That's so stupid, but awesome. Like, it makes sense. You know what I mean? Yeah, it makes sense. What? What? Did I mess something up?
No. What?
Oh, okay. I thought I was like, me sighing over the Justice Society was like, you know, like, guys, I think we lost Vito. That kind of thing.
Well, no, we totally lost you.
The page won't load. That's weird.
Who is... Is that Dr. Midnight in the back?
Yep.
African-American gentleman? Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Interesting. This is really interesting. And who's playing Obsidian? Is that...
There's two people playing Obsidian. Lance Henriksen is playing Obsidian in, like, the 80s as an old man, and then they have a different actor playing him in the 40s as a youngster.
Cool.
I just don't remember who's playing him younger. Hmm. He was probably from Vampire Diaries.
Yeah, of course. Or Beauty and the Beast, or something that films in Vancouver. But I'm excited, man. Everybody knows I'm a Justice Society fan.
No.
I mean, is it obvious? Wow, that Dr. Midnight looks good.
Yeah.
Like, I'm looking at the full shot of him. Obsidian is so weird, but I'm sorry, like, we're doing a podcast and I'm looking at stuff.
Is there anything else we need to touch upon?
No, you know, like, I would just, you know, let me ask you guys this about, like, what we were just doing, the movies Lost in Time. A while back, I'd say about 5 years, maybe, no, more than that, probably like 7 or 8 years, I was putting together a pitch for the Fantastic Four, but it was fantastic. It was around the time that they were doing Spider-Man Noir, Daredevil Noir, Luke Cage Noir, and I was like, I'm going to do a Fantastic Four Noir. And without going into details, because I don't remember a lot of them, but it's probably a story that I will try to tell in a different way. Would you pitch your stories, not as so much as film now, because, like, you know, a lot of these things, like, Harold Ramis passed away. You know, none of these people, you know, I can't make a Billy Wilder movie, and you can't make a Charlie Chaplin movie. But would you find...
But Bill Murray would totally play Booster Goldberg tomorrow if we asked him.
Oh, still. Yeah. Still. And be awesome. Which would be the craziest thing. But would you, like, try to make a comic book or some other... I mean, Scott, you're a filmmaker. So, like, would you try to make, like, a fan film out of, you know, like, out of your idea tonight?
I've done it before, but I don't know if I would do it again.
Oh, why not? That's let's delve into that.
there's a certain part of me, and this is a bone of contention I've had with other creators, which is basically I'm in a position in my life where I don't see much point in me writing fan fiction or making fan films when my time is so limited that I don't want to make something that has such a clear dead end at the end of it.
That's fair.
Making a fan film or writing fan fiction, it's like, I'm not disparaging anybody who does it, but there's like, since you don't own those characters, there's literally nothing you can do with it other than show people it until the people who own that property ask you to stop showing it to people.
Right.
And so,
or hire you to write it.
Yeah, which if as soon as that story happens, I'll change my tune. But I haven't heard of anybody making a fan film and going, oh, you should direct the real version. Why don't you come see us?
Right, right.
And so I'm not disparaging anybody who does it. You know, I think I love seeing them, and I love, you know, if someone posts a new fan film, I'll definitely check it out. But at this point in my life, it's like I have such limited resources when it comes to time, money, and time. It's just like a matter of like, well, if I'm going to do that, if I'm going to sit down and make a short film or a feature film or anything, I'd rather do it with my own characters and do something original that I could then turn around and sell, or I could do whatever I want with because I'm the owner of it. So yeah, so tonight, no, like I don't think I would, but I could be convinced otherwise. It's just not something that's, you know, I don't know. It doesn't. The idea doesn't really like excite me. Like, oh yes, I should definitely do this.
Well, you know, like I, you know, having never made a film, I assume, and that's a very bold word to use, but I would assume that my first film would be something like if I were to just go, okay, I've decided that from here on out I'm going to be a director. I'm going to be a film director. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of thing. I would assume that the first thing I would do would be a fan film, only because the familiarity with the subject matter would be a lot easier to convey than an original idea at first, you know? And I think that's kind of what you're saying too, because you did that Wolverine fan film.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I did, because when I went to film school, I definitely I fell down the film student path of really super heady, you know, like character driven films. And I kind of, as I left film school, I was like, I need to break out of this and try to speak a more cinematic language. And so I went, hey, let's make a short Wolverine film. I know that character. I could write that. And that's a character that would require no real special effects, blah, blah, blah. And so we made a little thing, and we ended up not finishing it because of a thousand different things. But it is fun sometimes to play with somebody else's toys. And I absolutely understand that. I do think a lot of writers, a lot of us do start there. We start with our G.I. Joes and our sandbox. Mm-hmm. We play with our Legos. We play with these different things. And then we even, we sit around our bedrooms and we write these stories, or we tell stories to our friends like, hey, wouldn't it be cool? Like if Superman ever did this, or, oh, and then this could happen and this could happen. So it's like, I think it's very natural to start to flex those muscles with characters, you know, and then start branching into your own original characters, you know, as you realize, you know, you can't actually write Superman. You can't actually write a Spider-Man story because the people, you know, will tell you not to. That's their property. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. But at this point in my life, I don't see it happening unless there was a very specific purpose. Like, oh, you know, hey, we're going to make an advertisement or a teaser for our upcoming convention or a party or a thing. What if we did this with Supergirl? I'd be like, yes, let's do it. That sounds like a lot of fun. But it would have to be something pretty specific like that for me sitting here at, you know, at the old age that I am to, you know, go back to that. Because, like, honestly, like if you were talking about doing something, I would say let's take a little chapter out of Stray's life. You know, let's do something. Even if you're like, I can't afford or I can't make the Stray costume. It's like, well, we could do something though in that world. Let's do something like that. You know.
Yeah, I mean, but I mean, I'm so close to the Stray, you know, property that it wouldn't be fan fiction at that point. You know, the reason why I'm bringing this up really
is because... it isn't, and that's why I would say that. I'd say let's do that. Let's make a 3-minute Stray trailer, or let's do like a little a night in, you know, Roddy's life or something like that. Let's do something like that where you get to play with a character you know a lot. You get to do that. You get to kind of flex those muscles, have that fun, but do something that is still ultimately yours, and you can do whatever you want with. You can make it available online, or you could use it as a demo reel or a pitch to somebody to make a Stray thing.
Well, you know, it's funny. Two things. One of the things, Dan, you might remember this, but Scott and I said very early on, like, with these pitches that we do on the show, like, we would love to see other people actually make them, you know, like,
right.
like we had this concept, and I still think this is true, that I don't mind giving these ideas away for free, you know what I mean? Because, like, it's just fun to do this. Like, tonight was fun. You know, like,
yeah.
It was super short, so I'm basically just filling time right now, just, right. Like, talking. But it was fun to, like, you know, think in those terms and in that kind of environment, you know. But for me, you know, like, going back to Stray, like, I said this a couple weeks ago, but I wrote a 30-minute, 30-page Stray short. You know, it ostensibly it's a teleplay for television and stuff, but if it's going to be for television, it has to be about 20 pages, you know, more than what it is,
right.
You know, like it's you know, a half hour should be close to 45 minutes, 50 minutes, you know, like, to, you know, depending on whether you're on streaming or
right,
you know, even prime time, you know, like, and they have commercials, yeah. But still.
And how much fighting there is.
Right. You know, like, I wrote it. It's funny enough, like, somebody was like, well, you don't have any act breaks. And I was like, oh, yeah, television. You would have to have act breaks. That makes sense. And I totally didn't put – so, like, I have to go back and put those in and stuff like that. But it was hard, very hard, you know, like, because, again, it's something I'm not used to. I'm used to writing a comic book and just letting it be a comic book. And but at the same time, like, I enjoy it, you know, like I would like to see this filmed, that kind of thing, you know, like, and, you mm-hmm. know, it could happen. It's written, you know, and I just got to do a rewrite, and then it'll be done, and it'll just sit on my computer or, you know, in the hands of my my co-producer friend who wants to direct the first episode as well. So, like, you know, it'll sit in his hands and stuff. And, like, you know, maybe one day it'll happen. Maybe it won't, you know, whatever. You know?
And it'll pass on down through the family from generation to generation.
Oh, my God. I don't know if I want to see Sadie or James, you know, do Stray. You know, I'd rather them live off of it. But, like, at the same time, I don't want them to feel obligated to, you know, if that made sense.
Yeah, you don't want them to be like Frank Herbert's kids?
Oh, God, no. No. But what about you, Scott? You're a man with a child. And
I am.
And you're a creator.
What's the question? Yeah.
Well, like, would you like your daughter to take up, say, Phileas, like, in 30 mm-hmm. years or something?
You know, somebody recently asked me a similar question because – they said, oh, you went to film school. How would you feel if your children went to film school? And I was like, well, A, I'd be terrified, but also, like, that sounds great because that's something I could help you with. Like, if I'd be more scared or worried, like, if she's like, Dad, I want to be an auto mechanic, I'd be like, well, you know, good luck. There's cars in the world and they need people, I guess. Go. You know, I cannot help you. I do not know them. I do not know who for you to talk to. But if you're interested in being a writer, if you're interested in being, you know, an artist of some form, I do have a few connections. I do, you know, there are people you need to talk to, your Uncle Vito. You know, there are certain people that I can get you in touch with that can put you down the right path. And if she's like, and also I want to, you know, I want to continue telling this story you started. I mean, I don't know how I could say no. You know, part of me would be like, no, that's fine. Another part of me would be like, you know what, make your own thing. You know, don't feel like you have to do that. But if she, you know, if she pitched me like we're doing here tonight and was like, but Dad, what if Phileas, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, oh, well, yes, then you need to go do that. since I have control of that character, yes, you know, I could do that, I guess. But so I guess the short of it is, I'd be kind of fine with that. I wouldn't have a problem with it unless I was still trying to tell stories with him. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, no, get away, mine. No, go.
No, you know what it is? Like I would be honored if either one of my kids were like, I would like to write this now. You know, like, especially if like it laid dormant for, you know, like 10 years or something like that. Like if I got to tell my last stray story, which is, you know, issue 50, mm-hmm. yes, it is planned, you know, but if I got a chance to, you know, to do it and tell my story, I would, and they came up to me 10 years later. Yeah, I would be honored, but at the same time, I would kind of be scared for them in a sense, because like, if let's just say for the sake of argument, Stray becomes something, you know, then they feel in the obligated to appease whatever fans are still around. You know what I mean? Like, or maybe no one will give them the chance to have their own voice. You know what I mean? Like, so that's kind of like, that kind of is daunting. You know, nobody should have to deal with that, you know, like no legacy, you know, for that matter, you know, should ever have to deal with having to live up to something that they frankly, you know, will never live up to, you know, like that's a hard thing to really put on a kid. You know?
I like that in your future, Stray is this huge, massive thing that is like this daunting, overshadowing thing that is like this heavy responsibility, because in my future I'm like, oh yeah, maybe she could make Phileas work, whatever.
No, like you don't want to like not try. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, it could very well be that Stray never becomes anything, and like it gets canceled after 6 issues, and then like I just move on to the next project, and then they see like the next trade paper, the 2 trade paperbacks or 3 or whatever, and they're like, how come this never went anywhere? They have an affinity for it, and then, you know, then that's what draws them, and they are to the idea of writing. You know, like that would be fine with me. I just never want them to feel like they have to live up to that.
Yeah, I get that.
So, let's do a real quick, you know, pre New York Comic Con type of like, what are we looking forward to next week? Is Flash and Arrow
in two and a half hours? It's Luke Cage.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, we're on the cusp of, like, a lot of huge things in the next couple of days. I didn't finish Daredevil yet. And, like, it's, like, I know people are like, what? You didn't finish Daredevil? I got news for you. I didn't finish Jessica Jones yet either.
Okay.
Well,
rethink your life.
No. because my life is basically watching the baby channel. So like I don't have an option, you know. Like I don't like it's just no, it's not no. even that I don't have an option. Yeah. I just don't have the time, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like I would love to just. There was a point I remember when
I haven't finished. I haven't finished Daredevil. Yeah. I honestly haven't either. Like I'm in season 2. I got through the first. I got through like the first 3 or 4 episodes. Like the episode I got to is the episode that reveals Elektra. You know, it's like, oh cool, and I've just never gone back to it. Like I'm going to, I just haven't.
Meanwhile, I've watched the second season of Daredevil like 3 times.
Jealous, just jealous.
Oh. I cheat though, because I take the day that it gets released off of work.
Nice. Yeah, that's fine. I mean, that would be nice, I guess, you know. But like,
the only thing that holds me back from honestly watching certain shows is whether or not my wife Kelly is interested in the show. Mm-hmm. Like Jessica Jones, we watched basically in a weekend because I was like, you might like this. And we watched the first episode and we went, oh, we have to watch all of this. And so as soon as Amelia would go to bed every night, that's what we were doing for like 3 or 4 nights in a row. But like Daredevil, it's like No. You know, so, like, I'm able to watch Supergirl. We watch The Flash. So I'm all caught up on those shows. But, like, some of those other ones, it's like, well, let's watch Gilmore Girls tonight because we both love that. We'll watch a couple episodes of that. And then it's like, well, when do I get the Daredevil time in? So I totally get that. And it's, like, a matter of picking and choosing what you get to watch, when you watch, or whatever. So I'll get around to it, but I don't feel like I have to watch the end of Daredevil to jump into Luke Cage.
Marriage is weird.
I think it's parenthood is even weirder. like not weird. You know, like, it's funny because, like, Michelle has a passing, and, like, I remember, like, it was so weird. She must have read something on Facebook or something or other, and she turned to me. She goes, "Do you think I'd like Jessica Jones?" I was like, "Yeah, you'd like Jessica Jones." Meanwhile, I bought her the Alias Omnibus years ago. And it's still in its plastic wrap. So it's out of print, and I have an out-of-print book that's probably worth money, but I want my wife to read it, you know? Right. Meanwhile, that kind of thing is daunting for somebody that doesn't read comics, you know what I mean?
Right.
So
right.
For her, with the Jessica Jones show, I know she'd love it, but I don't know that, just like me, she would have the time to actually, you know, digest it, you know, like, and sit down and like, she tried Orange is the New Black and she likes it, but she hasn't gone past season 2, episode 3, I think, you know. Right. So it's just when your entire life revolves around someone else, you know, like, it's hard to, like, make the time for yourself, you know.
Well, so. That's honestly why I've, for a little behind the curtain for you listeners, I've always insisted that we start recording at 9 o'clock, which is later than I think all of us PM, which is, I think, later than all three of us would like to start recording. But the fact of the matter is I work until 6 o'clock, sometimes 7 o'clock if I'm closing, which means I get home by like 7:20 and my daughter goes to bed like at 8:30. And so it's like,
you want to spend time with her.
Exactly. And so even on days where I get off early and I get to pick her up at 5, it's like, well, I get her for 3 hours in the entire day. I would, you know, so it's like, no, sorry, guys. I want a podcast. I love doing this, but I got to go spend some time with her. We have to, like, make some memories. We got to go have some fun. There are things I want to show you and do things with. And so, that, yeah, it's like your life does you're almost always reevaluating it and evaluating it and trying to figure out how to make the most of it and the best of it. And certain things, you know, I'm past the point of feeling bad that I've never seen certain shows. I hear The Wire.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, I hear The Wire is great. It's probably not going to happen in my lifetime.
Right.
No, I wouldn't say it wouldn't happen in your lifetime. Like, I haven't seen Breaking Bad yet. You know, but I know at some point it'll unless it disappears from Netflix and, you know, I just missed my opportunity, you know, like, I'll see it at some point. Like, that's the thing. Like, boy, we're giving you guys like a life cast tonight. you never know. There's somebody out there that's probably getting married or having a kid, you know, or something like that. So this is probably helping them. But
don't do it.
But it's not. But the person it's not helping is Dan Faust. He could give two shits. you know, like, that's why I'm okay with spoilers, because I know I'll see it eventually. And, you know, if I don't see it tomorrow, you know, like, it's not going to kill me, you know?
Right,
so, like,
right.
go ahead and spoil it, you know?
Yeah, the only time I don't want something spoiled is when I know I'm going to make time to see it.
Yeah.
The only thing I actually literally make time to see is The Flash. That's the only hour I get a week. I'm like, you know, that's why I didn't technically finish Supergirl. I jumped around. I stopped Arrow at, like, right before the episode where they resurrect Laurel, right? No, not Laurel, the other one.
Sarah,
thank you. I get them confused. They die and they come back to life. It's so hard. And I tried to watch Legends, and I have them all DVR'd, but, like, it very quickly lost its track, as much as I like it. You know,
it was
hard to kind of, like, you know, stay focused with it. I liked some of it, you know, most of it.
It started strong and it ended strong. The middle is a lot of filler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Before we get out of here, because we're going to get out of here shortly, I found a piece of notebook paper next to my pitch for tonight, and I just wanted to throw this out there. Like, I had other casting choices, you know, for Black Canary and Ollie. So the only other Ollie I considered was Paul Newman, But if you guys heard, like, I had a Barry Allen cameo, and I think Paul Newman would be a good Barry. You know, be like a very earnest Barry. I considered Steve McQueen as Slade Wilson, but I thought that was too on the nose. I thought like Adam West would just been like a nice for. It's weird because like,
especially if you're going for more of a comedy role,
right.
Because like if you were going for like a like an accurate like lethal Slade Wilson, I would have gone Lee Marvin.
Mm. Yeah. Oh my goodness, that's a good one. I didn't even think of that. But here are the interesting choices that I have.
I like Paul Newman as Barry. That's a nice Butch Cassidy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sunday kid kind of a.
Here's an interesting. These are really interesting when you think about it. I had to write down their ages too because I wanted to get somebody that was not too young, and that was a problem. The first choice I had was Marilyn Monroe, but in 1960 she was 44, so I don't know how she would have kept up with Robert Redford, who was 24. You know, so it was she's 44 or 39, something like that. She was a little bit older than she probably could have passed it for a young Dinah, you know, because that was the thing. Like, I wanted Dinah to be young. Sharon Tate was 17. She would have been perfect, but 17 would have been too young, maybe, to play against Robert Redford. Jane Fonda was 23, not 24. Anne Margaret was somebody that I had considered. She was 19 in 1960. And Stella Stevens was 24, who I really, really was like, she might work really, really well. And the reason why I didn't go with Stella Stevens is because she was a little too... The best way to put it is that Jane Fonda could have played like a young woman, but Stella Stevens looked like a woman. You know what I mean? Like she looked like, even though she was like the right age, she looked like she was... You know, like, to put it bluntly, she was full-chested and, like, she had, like, you know, that kind of, like, hourglass figure. And I think that would have distracted from the story a little bit. Like, when I think of The Apartment, I think of Shirley MacLaine looking kind of pixie-ish, you know? So I'm like, that's kind of, like, what I really would see Dinah as, you know, like, in this story.
Right.
You know? Like you put on a wig and, like, you transform a little bit. So you think about Jane Fonda and Barbarella. You know what I mean? Like, so you have that kind of like, she can transform, but she could also be plain. So I could like, I could see the dual identity kind of thing. So, so those were some choices, but Stella Stevens was definitely like my top before I went with Jane Fonda.
See, after our conversation earlier, before we started recording, I was tempted to throw Steve Guttenberg in a snapper car.
I don't know why you wouldn't pick Steve Guttenberg as like a Beetle. Even like a,
yeah,
I mean, I know you're getting the Aykroyd Bill Murray playing off each other and stuff, but
because even I mean even Michael Keaton could have been Ted.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
I mean, especially like a early '80s Michael Keaton.
Yeah, he was a comedian basically.
Yeah,
right after like Night Shift, he was just all comedian stuff. You know, like all comedy stuff before he did Batman, Beetlejuice,
Mr. Mom, yeah. Gung Ho.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But
Johnny Dangerously,
one of my favorite movies.
Love that movie.
It's one of my favorite movies. I think I buy it on Blu-ray. All right, well, let's. We've filled up enough air. Hey man, that was the whole point.
We stretched that nicely.
We literally stopped at 23 minutes. So like if anybody's still listening right now,
we're
like,
sorry.
We're so sorry. So let's just get out of here and let's not torture anybody any further. You can find The Untitled Opinion on Tumblr. It's The Untitled Opinion, all one word, .tumblr.com. You can interact with us on Facebook. It is facebook.com/The Untitled Opinion.
And in our dreams.
Well, in their dreams, because, you know, I don't know who's listening. So you can also subscribe to us on iTunes. And the reason why I say this is because we really need some more reviews. we have some pretty good reviews. We got one from one of our co-hosts and another one from another one of our co-hosts. And then we have one from our co-host's boss. And And then we have one. This one is the best. So those are all 5-star reviews, those three, right? So the fourth one is the best one because it's 3 stars, right? Just the best. So it's titled Stay on Track, !! Okay. And the review, it's by Nostalgia82, and it was written on December 4th, 2015. So here's the review. This is the best review ever. So I thought the podcast about 80s toys was going to be about, well, 80s toys. Instead, it's hosts versions of a Masters of the Universe Thundercats movie, and they go way off track and start discussing Netflix and Daredevil and Marvel and today's superhero movies and their staying power? !! Did I just jump podcast? !! Seriously, it's very annoying and a complete waste of time. It's so hard to stay focused and on track. Otherwise, why bother? I like you guys, but I'm really confused here. I love whoever wrote that, because you know that's
this episode goes out to you.
Oh, yeah, yes, Nostalgia 82. We're sorry. Like, we're so sorry, because that's the thing. Like, you know, we could have easily made this.
We should track him down, like Jay and Silent Bob style,
and give him a dollar.
Yeah,
instead of, you know, what they did. But like, yeah, you know, that's the thing. Like, I bring
or up, her.
Yeah, true. The reason why I bring up iTunes is because we do need reviews. But the thing is, I encourage a 3-star review. I encourage a 1-star review. We want to know what we're doing wrong. Apparently, we didn't read this soon enough. But,
but next time we'll do better.
We will do better.
Only a year ago.
Yeah, really. but yeah, so definitely, you know, if you subscribe to us on iTunes, you know, please leave us a review. We're on Stitcher. You can subscribe to us there. And we're on a bunch of other podcasting aggregating apps, so except for Howl. God, I wish we were on Howl. We'd have sponsors and make money probably. But yeah, you know, definitely, you know, you can find us in a bunch of different places. Speaking of finding us, Dan Faust, where can you be found on the internet?
I can be found at DanielRFaust.wordpress.com. I still haven't posted a new story. I keep meaning to, but it's just not happening.
It's like the show. We don't force shows. We have something.
Right. I've literally sat down like every weekend and just got into like an exposition hole. I can also be found on Tumblr, danfaust.tumblr.com. And if you search Daniel R. Faust on Amazon, you will find a bunch of books that I've written for elementary school children about robots and such.
Speaking about books for elementary school children, Scott, why don't you tell them what came out last week?
Oh, Action Lab, Dog of Wonder, the first trade came out last week, and it's super cool. So basically, I definitely had a lot of people in my life, people who aren't necessarily comic book readers, who loved the idea of the story that we were telling. And like, I would love to read this. I'd love to give it to kids. There were several people who approached me about like, I want to get this for the kids at my school or at my hospital or whatever. And this is really this is to me the ideal format for you. It collects all 3 issues, which is the opening story. It's a complete story that is, you know, very easy to contain. It's only $9.99 for all, you know, for the whole book. And you can find it at Amazon.com. You can find it at your local comic book store. You can probably find it at Barnes & Noble. If none of those places have it, they can totally order for you and get it to you. Vito and I wrote it, and Rosie Higgins? Mm-hmm. And Ted, yeah, the reason I ask, if you guys are listening, is because I always switch your names in my head for some reason. So it's Rosie Higgins and Ted Brandt did the art, and it's a gorgeous-looking book, and it was so much fun to write. And it is out now and available at every place. So go and buy all the copies.
If you order it at your comic book store, the order code is July 16, 1118. July 16, 1118. What else you got going on, Scott?
Writing. things.
You you wrote a play, didn't you, recently?
I did. Yeah, I wrote a play this year. Something that I pitched. I've had these. The way I like to describe it is, as a storyteller, you have to be a story collector first. And one of the stories that I've always kind of wanted to tell is the story from the Bible, the story of Mary and Joseph. Has always been a story that I've always found kind of intriguing, but I've never really found a way into that story. But now, as a father, and as a father of via adoption, I've kind of found my way into that story, and I started writing it. And then I approached a local church here in the area that is very outwardly focused, very community focused, very driven and outreach and things like that. And I said, I have a play I'd like to write. Would you be willing to give me your space to basically put this on? And they loved the idea. And he was like, we would love to do a Christmas play. Do you have a Christmas play you could write? Mm. I was like, good news.
Do I?
So I have written this play, and it's something that I'm really kind of proud of and excited about. It is the story of Mary and Joseph, as we all kind of, you know, I think everybody, whether you're churched or not, probably get to know the basic story. But it's one that I really kind of try to zoom in. And
they're like the Kents, right?
Exactly like the Kents. Well, that's almost my approach, which was to remove like all of the prophecy, remove like the angels and the shepherds and the wise men, basically remove everything that you kind of expect from a nativity play. And really focus on the characters and what it's like to be a person suddenly in the middle of something much larger than yourself and being asked to reevaluate your life and refocus your life when you weren't planning on that. And so it's called The Gospel of Joseph, and it's this kind of the story through Joseph's perspective. And I'm really excited. We're entering pre-production. We'll be holding auditions in a couple of weeks.
You also have a Facebook page.
I do.
If you anybody go to Facebook, wants to check it out.
Yeah, facebook.com/Gospel of Joseph, all one word. There's not a lot there right now, but there you can get a little bit of information. There are some script pages available if you're thinking about auditioning or just want to read the script pages. You can check that out. That's my current project, which I am super psyched about. Coming around the corner, though, if you're in the Chattanooga area or you don't mind traveling, I will be in Artist Alley at Anime Blast Chattanooga, which is at the located at the historic Chattanooga Choo Choo. I will be there, and I'm really excited to be there. I'll have copies of Phileas Reed there, and I'll have copies of Action Lab. Come find me. Talk nerd to me.
What are you doing next week, Vito?
Funny we should mention conventions. I will be at New York Comic Con. What is this, like the 12th year of New York Comic Con? I haven't missed one yet. And this is the second time that I will be tabling in Artist Alley. I will be tabling with my Golden Guard artist extraordinaire, my good friend Carlos Caballero. We don't have a book yet. This is a very interesting thing. We don't. You know, we have some.
But you have T-shirts.
We have T-shirts for sale at incognito.threadless.com. You can get them. You know, like there's just two designs. One is the bullet, and one is the logo. But for sale at the at our table, we'll have prints. We'll have. I don't want to spill the beans, but I'm going to spill the beans. So we wanted to really expand the audience for what this book could be, because we the three of us, Charlie McKelvey, Carlos, and I, we really believe in this book, and we do plan on doing a Kickstarter at the end of the year, maybe even in January. And I keep pushing it back because I want to be ready, you know, like I want to make sure we have enough material to go up on Kickstarter and stuff. So we're going to have prints. There's a nice, beautiful, if you go to the facebook.com/ the Golden Guard, you'll be able to see what prints we're going to have. But we wanted to expand the audience, and so we added an RPG element to the book. So when the book comes out, there's going to be campaign stats for each individual character and campaigns. We wanted to get a jump on that, so we created these they're like 6x4, so they're like postcard size, but we basically made magic cards. For you to do a role-playing game, but not in the sense of Magic where you play, and you tap and stuff like that. So you have three hero cards, one villain card, and one campaign card. So the game master will get the campaign card. You can either decide to play as the villain, or you can let the GM kind of make it an NPC. And then you have three heroes that have to. There's two adventures on it too, so it's really, really cool. All the artwork is original artwork by Carlos Caballero. There is a villain that will not be in the book, so that it's kind of worth checking out this card set that we'll be selling. And it's a really, like, again, it's super ambitious. I don't.
I'll take one.
I guarantee you. Okay, so I will be there to Artist Alley table. Excuse me, I just burped. I don't know why I had to.
It the first time you've ever burped?
No,
Is that
it took me
surprising?
by surprise. I'll be at Artist Alley table I7. I'll be right next to Ray Anthony Height, who does Midnight Tiger, which I just been announced as the new writer of Midnight Tiger. I'll be right next to he'll be next to Jamal Igel. So we'll be pretty. It's basically an Action Lab row, so like we'll be pretty visible. But Golden Guard is not an Action Lab book, which is going to make being next to the vice president of Action Lab and Artist Alley very, very interesting. But I paid for my table. I don't give a damn. So we're gearing up to do a Kickstarter. This is basically just outreach. You know what I mean? So there'll be some stray books for sale. I have these really cool stray patches that'll be for sale that you can only get at New York Comic Con. Possibly I'll send them if we have leftover as rewards to some of the backers for the second straight Kickstarter. So Dan, you don't have to buy one. You're definitely going to get one. just
That hasn't stopped me before.
that's true. You're gonna have to. You don't have to buy one, but I can buy two. So, yeah. So like, we'll have some stuff there for you. But I do want. I feel like I've been remiss in mentioning this week to week. I have a weekly comic books series called The Purple Heart, which is up at Line Webtoon, which is webtoons.com, I believe, on the internet, and it's an app on iOS and Android. And people friggin' love it, man. I don't understand. I mean, I don't usually get this much praise for anything I do, but like people love it. So yeah, it's a part of the New Brooklyn universe that Dean Haspiel, Seth Kushner, and I kind of created. It's worth a look. It's a very interesting book. Like we did this chapter, not this week's chapter. Chapter 10 was super experimental. So and there's another chapter 8 was really experimental. There's a lot of really cool things to see graphically in this, so it's worth your time. It's free. The subscription, because you do want to like sign up for an account so you can kind of give us like a like they have instead of a like button, they have a heart button. And the comments are fantastic. Like we're really being touted by a lot of people. Like people were, it's funny because people thought it was a comic about PTSD and it's not, but it is. People thought it was a comic about like racism, but it's not, but it is. Like it's so many, it's the best way I could describe it is this is my version of like Steve Englehart and Jim Starlin in the 70s. This is a total Bronze Age comic. So like it's a really interesting comic to read. I'm very proud of it.
So for them, you stay on track.
How dare you? But I do want to mention that Ricardo Venancio, who is Portuguese, who does the art, will be at New York Comic Con. He'll probably be at my table once or twice, so you can come and meet him. We will be signing at the Line Webtoon booth on Saturday. So just go find the Line Webtoon booth, and you can find us there. I'll be at my table almost exclusively. I might have a signing at the Action Lab booth, I think Friday. They haven't announced it yet, and which is terrible because I love knowing these things in advance, but I also, don't want to be away from my table too much. So, just come to Artist Alley I7 and we'll see you there. The other thing I do want to mention though is
I'll be lurking there Thursday.
Yes, I know you will. I think you just I think you said on Facebook that you will not be anywhere else or something.
I think actually no, that's not entirely true. I will be bouncing back and forth between you guys and Dave Gallagher.
Oh, okay. That he's not too far away. But yeah, so hope you guys come out. Other than that, there was a big announcement at Baltimore Comic Con by Action Lab about a book called Mila Teddy Bears that is going to be given out. There are going to be five. This is crazy. 5 million copies given away for free to elementary schools. Mm-hmm. And I wrote it. So this is the biggest audience I think I've ever had in my life. So like, it's crazy. Like I didn't, you know, like it was just, they asked me to do it. I'm now no longer just the dog guy. I'm the bear guy now, but.
Well, I've always thought of you as a bear.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard that from a select few friends. But yeah, so like it's going to be, I think available on Veterans Day because it's got a military theme. So I would look to your local comic book stores to see if they know anything about it. It hasn't been announced in previews as far as I know. I haven't picked up previews in a couple of months, so I'm not sure. But at the retailer summit, everyone seemed to be very excited about it. So your retailer might know about it. So if you want to pick up a copy, they might have them at Action Labs booth in New York. I'm not sure. So, definitely look into that. So Purple Heart online webtoons, Stray is coming in February. I hope. I say I hope because the guys are drawing and I don't know what they're drawing until they're done. let's see what else. Midnight Tiger next year. I'll be writing, taking over. Just a lot of things happening right now. Like, and I wrote a Stray teleplay. Like, can I get any busier? Could I be any busier? It's always time for Chandler being at reference, right?
I think we should do two episodes a week.
Yeah, that'll happen. We don't even know what we're doing.
I just twitched.
We don't even know what we're doing next week. But we'll find out. And when we do, and I say next week, but we're not doing anything next week because Dan and I will be at New York Comic Con, so we will not be able to record. So unless Scott does a solo episode, you guys are screwed.
I'm going to be in Florida.
Oh, really? What are you doing in Florida?
Vacation. Going on holiday.
Eating any faces?
What part?
What part?
Yeah.
New Smyrna Beach.
Okay.
Are you going to eat any faces?
Of course. Good job. There's it's near Daytona, basically, really close to Daytona. So we're going down there. My in-laws have like a timeshare there, so we basically get to stay for free. And we'll go down there, enjoy the beach. One day we'll abandon the kidlet and go to Universal Studios, so the adults can enjoy Harry Potter World. And
that is the worst thing you have ever said. You're going to abandon your child so you can enjoy Harry Potter. Like, she wouldn't enjoy it. Oh, my goodness.
She doesn't appreciate it like we do.
That's probably true. That's probably true. Because, like, we showed Sadie it was 2 years ago we took her. She was, like, a year and a half. We took her to Disneyland. And we showed her the video of her on the Dumbo ride. And she, like, first of all, in the video, unfazed. Watching the video 2 years later, unfazed. So, like, I know she would appreciate it now more than she did back then, but...
That's the discussion we had.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, we'll go back next year, because we think next year will be the perfect year to take Amelia to Disney for the first time. Mm-hmm. Universal doesn't really have anything for her. And we want the Universal.
She might get scared of sharks afterwards.
She might, but, you know, there's the ocean for that.
Yeah, good point. There's real life.
That's just common sense.
And Jaws. All right, everybody. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Thank you for listening. We appreciate you sticking around. Again, like, you know, we wish we could do this more frequently. And like Scott said before, like, it's a struggle, but, you know, we do try to put these out as often as possible. So thank you again.
Absolutely.
Have a good night. Have a good day. Have a good afternoon whenever you're listening to this. And we'll talk to you after New York Comic Con.
Bye.
Later, kids.